This message was recorded live at Lighthouse Christian Center in Puyallup, Washington, and is designed to inspire and encourage you in your Christian journey. To find out more about Lighthouse, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org.
You guys, it was many, many years ago that I first learned the difference between a preference and a conviction. And a preference, I have it in your outline there, man, it's a belief that you hold, and maybe you hold it very strongly, and yet that belief could change under the right circumstances. And a conviction, on the other hand, is a belief that you will not change under any circumstances. So you could be a vegetarian by preference. That is, hey, I prefer vegetables. I won't eat meat most of the time. Oh, but if the right circumstances come up, I might just have that little chicken breast. That'll be great. However, if you are a vegetarian by conviction, it means that you hold to that belief no matter what happens. Doesn't matter if there's no food available, no vegetables available. You are sticking to your guns. Now, here's my observation as a pastor. If we don't watch it, as believers, we can on many levels base our lives, live our lives based on preferences rather than convictions. But look what Paul told the Thessalonians in 2 Thessalonians. Look what he says. Dear brothers and sisters, stand firm and keep a strong grip on the teaching we pass to you. Guys, when he says keep a strong grip on the teaching, what he's saying is, man, have convictions. Know what God has said. And then you stick with those, not based on changing circumstances, but you go for it. You know, in our postmodern culture today, everything is relative. But of course, with God, things are not relative. So our beliefs need to be convictions, not preferences. Now, why am I going on and on about convictions versus preferences? Well, I want you to know this weekend we're talking about marriage, the marriage relationship. And if we're not careful, we can put all kinds of beliefs about marriage under the big banner of preferences. When God has said, no, I have some convictions for you to hold to, things that I want you to know. And guys, because we haven't done that as a culture, because we haven't done it, you realize that 40% of the people who are married today, 40% of those people have been married before. They're on their second or third or more marriage. Partially, and by the way, I don't want to bash anybody who's been divorced. I understand that there are a lot of different circumstances out there. But what I'm saying is a lot of that happens because we're not holding to the convictions that God tells us to hold to in marriage. Now, I want to emphasize three convictions today. There are others that we could name as a church, but I want to emphasize three different convictions that have been helpful for me in my life. These are not theoretical, guys. These are convictions that I have held to and lived out, and my wife Naomi has held to and lived out in our lives. And because we have, guess what? Our marriage has remained strong. We're talking about convictions that will help keep your marriage strong. And that's what we'd want to see it with God's people. So the first conviction I want to talk about is not going to surprise you. Here it is. My marriage is a permanent relationship. You find that in Mark 10. No human being then must separate what God has joined together. Now, guys, that is about as clear as it can get. And in fact, this conviction really is the foundation of a great marriage, because without total abandonment to that marital bond, believe me, nothing works very well in marriage. Genesis 2 indicates clearly that the marriage relationship represents a permanent bond. Look what it says. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh. Now, you see that phrase, be united to his wife? That comes across pretty well in the NIV. But in the New American Standard, it's even better. It says that he shall cleave to his wife. And you know that that word cleave is a Hebrew word that conveys a very strong concept. The word cleave referred to physical objects just sticking to each other. It's like muscle and bone. That's how strong this bond is. In fact, Mark 10:7, you see Jesus' full amplified meaning when he talks about Genesis 2. Look what he says. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. But then they are no longer two, but one. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no man separate. So Jesus says here, come on, God is the one who does the joining. And God is the one who joins a man and a woman. Now, you see that word join in this passage? It means literally to yoke together. Think about that. When you're up here on the wedding, getting married, God, the yoke is coming down. And you're getting into a yoke together. And God is the one who does it. Okay? And it's a spiritual, it's a psychological union. And God is the one who makes it happen. And it's a permanent arrangement. So leave, and so when you look at the word join, when you look at the word cleave, man, there's no doubt here. It is a permanent arrangement. Now, if you're a young couple today, I want you to listen very carefully. Do you realize that more divorces happen in that 7-8 year period than in any other period? And that we also know that today, 1 in 12 couples will divorce within 24 months of getting married. That means somebody can meet someone, date them, they can get married, they can get divorced in less time than it takes to go to college. It's all done. You know, it's all there. So believe me, what Jesus is saying here is, this is a conviction that you and I need. Marriage is a permanent relationship. Do not mess with it. That's what he's saying. And in fact, Neil Warren, who's written a number of books on marriage, he interviewed 100 couples who had exceptionally strong marriages. And he asked them the question, well, what do you think maybe is the key? I know there's lots of things to do, lots of things that you could say here, but what do you think the key is? Every single couple said, well, it's commitment. That is the most important thing. It's we are totally committed to the success of this marriage. In other words, that when both partners in the couple, they're saying, man, this is a permanent relationship. When we both have that conviction, it is a strong predictor of marital success. This conviction is so important. Friends, when you marry, here's what I want you to do. Close the door to divorce, lock the door, and throw away the key, okay? Now, here's my prediction. There'll be some point in your relationship where you'll come up and rattle the door, okay? And you'll want to get it open, but you'll remember, oh, I threw away the key. This is not an option. And believe me, you will only benefit from having that conviction. You know, my friend Dave Boyer has told me the story a few times about his father who divorced his mother when he was 18. And of course, divorce affects children no matter how old they are. Okay, at 18, it was a massive, massive loss for him. But his father, he went and talked to his father about it. And his father told him this, listen, son, if I don't divorce your mother, I'm going to physically die. That's what he told him. 2 weeks before his father died, he had a fatal disease. He invited David to come to his bedside. And he told David this, Dave, the one thing that I regret in my life is my divorce. I failed in a major way because of this one event. In retrospect, the things that I disliked about your mom, the things that were going on in the relationship, is the same struggle I had in my second marriage. I should have stayed and taken care of it. Now, that is the testimony of many, many, many people who divorced. He wished he'd had a chance to do it again. Now, there are two reasons why this whole permanent gig is so important, why it's so important to hold to this. Number one, first of all, it's going to spur you on to work out your partnership issues. Think about it. Marital difficulties, man, they are painful. They are difficult. And if you don't watch it, you're thinking, okay, this is so painful, I'm going to opt out of this deal. But when you hold as Christians this conviction, oh, it's permanent, it finally gets through your head, man, this issue is not going to go away, and I'm here permanently. Either I take care of this issue, or I spend 50 years in pain. And so when you say marriage is permanent, when you have that conviction, it forces you to look again, to look inside, to look at the issue, and to say, we've got to get this handled. And in fact, for example, there are so many issues in marriage. One of them is just the power issue. When you're first married, there's an issue. Who is going to make the decisions? Who's going to have the power? Let's suppose 5 years later, you're still working on that. Who's going to make the decision? What kind of partnership is this? What are we going to do? Well, it means if marriage is permanent, what does it mean? It means that you can't just go for the win. It means that you can't run over your spouse. It means that you can't do any of that, because if you do, you'll be in misery the rest of your life. You've got to handle that issue in a way that honors your spouse. That is, if you're going to have a good marriage, if you're going to have a strong marriage. So you see, the first deal here is, man, it makes you handle issues. But secondly, if marriage is permanent, it also will keep you in the process of transformation. Guys, I want you to know something. Marriage is God's antidote to a selfish heart. I want you to know that. If you are a committed Christian, you know that you cannot live with your spouse and stay self-centered. God is always getting you to look inward, always getting you to evaluate what's going on. Now, how many of you have heard of the author and writer and counselor Kevin Lehman? Anybody else you have heard of Kevin Lehman? A lot of you have. Kevin Lehman is 65 years old. He's been married 42 years. He's written 37 books on marriage. I heard him on the radio last week, and what he said was this. In my life, my wife, Sandy, has been the instrument for transformation in my life. Now, he didn't say an instrument. He didn't say a part of. He said, Sandy has been the instrument of spiritual growth in my life. How could he say that? Well, guys, think about it. Husbands and wives, we're living with our spouses, and we keep getting confronted with our own selfishness. We keep getting confronted with our own hard hearts, and we got to go to the Lord and say, oh, you got to help me. I can remember in the first 5 years of marriage with my wife, Naomi, and whenever I felt hurt, and usually she didn't even know she hurt me, okay? She would just be innocent, and I would just be hurt. And I would go away, and when I get hurt, what would I do? I would just go away and hide and not speak to her and just kind of try to heal. And I thought, well, she won't even notice. But, of course, she noticed. And she would talk to me, and she'd say, Art, that hurts me so much when you go away. You've got to stick in there and talk with me. So I would often have to go to the Lord and say, Lord, you got to help me. I know that's not fair to you, but you got to change me. You got to help me. Well, that's just one issue in which I had to go to the Lord and say, Lord, you got to help me to be like you. And when I did, guess what? My heart began to be transformed. That's the beauty. That is the beauty of a married relationship. But it only happens when you say, this deal is permanent. Because there's no way out. And if there's no way out, guess what? You make it right. If there's no way out, you're going to do better at making it right. Now, number two, that's been a very strong conviction in my life. But there's a second conviction that has helped me so much. And that is just simply this. My couple friendship gets top priority. Now, I'm not saying here that your spouse comes before God. I'm not saying you have to quit your job so you can be with him or her 24/7. Not saying any of that. I'm saying that when you consider any activity that you could give your time to, when you consider any relationship that you could invest in, that your friendship with your husband or wife must be considered first. It can't be a preference. It's got to be a conviction. Now, guys, this is simply a natural application of love. Remember, in Ephesians 5, Paul said, husbands, love your wives. In Titus, Paul said, wives, you love your husbands. And one just very simple application of love is, am I going to demonstrate that by making room in my world for my spouse? See, that's one of the primary ways you demonstrate love, is by making room in your world for your spouse. It's making that friendship a priority. And when I say best friends, I'm not talking about doing something weird and getting all enmeshed and never having room for anybody else. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about investing more heavily in that friendship than in any other relationship in your life. You know, one writer said it this way. Friendship as a couple begins when two people deliberately share the same world, sharing time, interest, feelings, thoughts, goals, and ideals. I totally agree with this. A couple who begins to sense distance in their relationship, guys, you track with me on this. If you're sensing distance in your relationship as a couple, it's because probably you are gradually beginning to experience different worlds. That is, your work is taking you many, many times away, or you're just choosing different activities than your spouse. Listen, the key concept on this deal is sharing. And what you need to do, if you want to develop a deeper friendship, you've got to share yourself in a variety of ways. I want to stretch your thinking here and just tell you two very simple ways to share your world. And these are things that Nam and I have been working on for 35 years. First, share activities, interests, and experiences. Man, guys, the first way that couples develop their friendship is by sharing varied activities. You just do things together. It can be things as simple as doing the grocery shopping and as exotic as a Caribbean cruise, and everything in between. The point is, you're doing it together. And the togetherness means, man, you're looking for ways to share interests, to share activities, to share hobbies. You're looking for ways to stay connected. Best friends make sure that their schedules include shared activities. Now, Nam and I have done all kinds of things all the way up. In our 30s, I can remember one time in our 30s, a few years ago, Nam and I were looking for just a way to connect. So we said, oh, we both love watercolors. Let's take this watercolor class. It's 6 weeks long. And I just took a long lunch for 6 weeks, and I would meet her up there. And was it about watercolors? No. We both loved watercolors. We thought it'd be fun. Did we think we would become great artists? No. Did we ever draw anything worth looking at? No. Okay. But it wasn't about that. It was just about, oh, we're going to spend an hour and a half together for 6 weeks. And then, of course, we did have some fun times trying to do some drawings and colorings and, you know, after that. But it really was about just being together. In our 40s, we did so many other things. You know, I remember one time we spent a long time. Okay, we're going to do walking on Saturday and Sunday. And now she had walking partners for Monday through Friday, friends that she's had for many years. But on Saturday and Sunday, we're going to get up and we are going to walk together and have an exercise walk. Of course, that was back before we had Sunday services. You know, I'm okay. And so why did we do it? We just did it to be together, to share some things. I have friends who every day when they come home from work, they play a game of Boggle. Anybody know what Boggle is? Yeah, it's a bad game. I hate the game because I can't do it, okay? But every day, they're playing Boggle. They're both really good at it, and they like the competition, and they spend time together. It's just a shared activity. You know, and I have done all kinds of things. We learned the game of bridge 20 years ago, to be together, to do something together. We have friends who love to boat. We have friends who love to sail. It's all about picking things that keep you together. Now, some of you are saying, wow, Art, we have small children. This is impossible. Well, I want to say that I know that it is harder if you have children, especially if you have preschool children. But here's what I say. Do the best you can and know it's going to get better. Okay? It is going to get better. But in the meantime, you do the very best you can. And by the way, do not put your kids above your spouse. Please do not put your children above your spouse. I can tell you that my wife, Naomi, was a consummate mom, and I never, ever felt that my kids came before I did. She made me feel as if this relationship was the key relationship. And by the way, what you learn, younger parents, is eventually the children leave. And it's just you. So what you developed when they were kids really stands you in good stead. You had to go that direction. So there it is. Now remember that this whole activity deal can include work projects. Okay? You say, Art, you're talking about leisure activities, right? No. I'm talking about anything that keeps you together. And that includes work projects. Nam and I have done wallpaper. We have done remodeling. We have done planting. We planted a yard together. I'm getting tired. Just think about all the stuff that we have done. Now, what has taken place when we've done it? We've enjoyed being together. We've enjoyed talking as we've done it. We've enjoyed getting something accomplished. We did something together. And it made it a big difference. Over the years, it's been amazing. Now, guys, if this is a conviction, my couple friendship is a top priority. Listen, you keep looking for those activities. And yes, you're going to have to work at it, but keep looking for them. Share them together. Whether it's an unexpected lunch at Denny's or a special moonlight dinner, doesn't matter. Well, it matters, but doesn't matter that much. Whether it's Denny's or a moonlight dinner, doesn't matter. It's being together. You know, in a good marital friendship also, now I said you share activities. Remember, you're sharing your world. The first thing I'm saying is share activities, share experiences. But secondly, I would say also share thoughts and ideas. This kind of exchange, man, is so important. Couples who talk and listen, they come closer and they share their world together. Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, friend shapes friend. So, you know, in the ancient times, they were iron tools, and as they kind of interacted together, they would, of course, shape each other and sharpen one another. So that's what happens in a marriage. When we interact with thoughts, when we interact with ideas, when we interact with conversation, we shape each other's lives. We come together. Naomi and I discuss opinions, thoughts, ideas from political personalities to what God is talking to us about in Scripture to any number of things. And of course, Naomi and I have spent about 30% of our lives talking about our children, okay? Now, some of you are going, Art, that's all we do. We talk about it. That doesn't even count. We should not count talking about children. Yes, count it. Why? Because when you talk about children, you're sharing your thoughts, you're sharing your ideas, you're sharing your emotions, you're sharing your hopes, you're sharing your dreams. Wow, it'll make all the difference in the world. So, yeah, children, that does count. The issue is just sharing your world. Now, let me be honest here. I have noticed over many years that women approach intimacy through the window of shared communication, and that men approach intimacy through the window of shared activities. In other words, men get intimate by what they do. Women get intimate by what they say. That's the reason women, by the way, that your husband can be sitting watching TV with you, have his arm around you, and he thinks he's getting intimate with you, okay? And you're just waiting until the TV shows quit so you can talk, okay? But he has a different view, okay? Now, think about this. If you are sharing your world both through shared activities and shared thoughts and ideas, you're hitting both avenues, aren't you? You're hitting both what a woman would relate to in a greater way, and both what a man would relate to in a little greater way. And that's the reason that if you say, man, it's a commitment, my couple friendship comes first, and when I think about this, we've got to be thinking about shared activities, shared experiences, and then also how we share our world through what we say and how we communicate. Now, there's one final conviction that has meant a great deal to me and that I hold strongly. It's not a preference. It's a conviction, and that conviction is this: I will discover my spouse's needs, and do my best to meet them. This is not a preference. I could make, this is similar to two, but think about it. I could make friendship a priority, but still not do my best to understand my spouse and see what they need and try to meet it. I could do it that way. Look at what the Apostle Peter tells believers. Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way. Isn't that an interesting phrase? In an understanding way. To live with your wives in an understanding way is just letting your actions be guided by an awareness of and concern for your wife's needs. Bottom line, learn what your spouse needs and do your best to supply it. Now, surely the Scriptures as a whole, we can infer from this, that understanding goes both ways. I think God wrote it to men because we're denser, okay? We need to be shook up a little bit, okay? But surely, if you apply this issue of love, surely understanding must go both ways. And basically, that if you're going to love, as we are commanded to love our husbands, commanded to love our wives, surely that has got to include both husbands and wives understanding each other's needs and meeting those needs. So let's talk about what the greatest need for a man is, what the greatest need for a woman is. The scriptures are pretty plain here. Look what it says in Ephesians 5. Each of you also must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. Now, guys, long before that book was written, Love and Respect, we had the scriptures. And the scriptures over and over again said, husbands, love your wives. Wives, yeah, you got to love your husband too, but respect your husband. So it's very, very clear God's saying it over and over again. The greatest need of a man is to feel respected. The greatest need of a woman is to feel loved. This understanding will keep you from making a lot of mistakes. You know, sometimes women, what they do is they show a lack of respect to get their husband to love them. Or men do the same thing. They show a lack of love to get their wives to respect them. Not a good plan, you guys. You're doing the very thing that is opposite that you need to be doing, okay? So let me offer an alternative. If because you know that your wife needs love, if she's not demonstrating love to you, you might want to consider, not demonstrating respect to you, you might think, in what ways am I failing to love her? And for wives, if your husband is failing to show you the kind of love you'd like, you might look inward and say, are there ways in which I'm not showing respect to him? It can go both ways. Now, what does respect look like? Let's talk about this for a moment. What does respect really look like? Well, when I talk about respect, I'm simply talking about actions and attitudes which communicate esteem, appreciation, and love. Now, some of you women are going, I have a grown man here. He doesn't need appreciation. I'm telling you, wives, I am telling you that if you're going to demonstrate respect to your husband, he will need appreciation, attaboys. He'll need esteem. He'll need value. Now, you say, well, how do you do this? Well, it's primarily, I think, for man, it's primarily communicated in talk. I mean, how you speak to them, your tone, your facial expression, your word choice. And I think you know what we're talking about. I mean, for example, here's negative ways to do that. Okay, you roll your eyes and you look disgusted and you're derisive or you have sarcastic words or anything like that. What does it do? It shows disrespect. But positive words, positive eye contact, things that attaboys, things that communicate worth, can communicate appreciation, all those things go into this. Listen, wives, the killer for your husband is rejection. Put downs to your man will cause him to shut down. Put downs go right to shut down most often. And even a godly man finds that difficult. Harshness is hard for your guy to deal with, but respectful words will build him up. Let me give an example. A few years ago, several years ago now, I went out to the front of our house and I tried to start our S10 pickup and it wouldn't start. And because that pickup had a certain sound, I just knew it wasn't the battery because it had that certain sound. I knew it wasn't the battery. And so I went in, I said, honey, I'm going to have to call the car to be towed because it won't start. And she said, well, is it the battery? And I said very confidently, no, it is not the battery. I listened to it. It's not the battery. Oh, and she said, okay. So I had it towed and at the cost of $80. And then the guy at the thing said, it's the battery. Which I could have done by myself at my own home. I could have done it. Now, when I came home and told Naomi, I said, Naomi, it was the battery. Here's what she said to me. She said, well, Art, that's okay. It's sometimes hard to diagnose car problems. And I said, yes, you're right. It is hard for us men to diagnose sometimes. Things are so difficult. But we try the best we can, and then we are. No, I mean, I'm telling you, all I'm telling you is, man, she could have, can we think of other things she could have said? Well, there's an $80 up in smoke. How about that? How about, well, next time you might want to listen to me? Stuff like that. Now, guys, I would have handled it. I would have done the best I could, you know. But, listen, she showed me respect. Even though I made a mistake, she allowed me to make a mistake without a loss of respect for me. And if she'd been harsh with me, she'd criticized me, if she'd put me down, that would have been rejection. Remember, ladies, your men are strong, but when their partner does this, it hurts them and it pushes them away. A man's default reaction to rejection is to withdraw. That's his default. Now, a godly man can make that not happen. But I'm just telling you what the default is. You reject in word, tone, and he will tend to go this way. And by the way, I'll be very careful. This is one of the reasons why the sexual relationship is such a big deal with men. Now, of course, men have a strong sexuality, and that's a given, okay? But, ladies, believe me, a lot of the pain of sexual relationship for men is about rejection. They have male egos, and when they are rejected sexually, it's very painful. Now, am I saying, ladies, that you should respond to your husband sexually every time he would desire it? No. Because, you know, for the obvious reasons. But I'm saying, though, tone, facial expression, word choice, do not communicate rejection. Don't let it happen. Ladies, I have learned that when a wife shows respect for her husband, he will usually, I mean, work feverishly to meet his wife's needs. Now, I know that doesn't happen always because we're not always healthy people. And there are a lot of things that I think that play into that. But often, man, if you will show it, a husband will bend over backwards. He will do everything he can to meet your needs. Now, men, a woman's greatest need, we've talked about respect here. What about a woman's greatest need? I'm going to say that woman's greatest need is love, but there are lots of different ways to express that love. Let me say it this way. To love your wife mean that your actions and your attitudes communicate clearly that you cherish her and that she is dear to you, that you hold her dear. This is wired into your wife. It's in her DNA. Men, this is the reason that anniversaries are often more important to your wife than to you. Now, women, I hate to burst your bubble on this. We men, we think our anniversaries are okay. We like to be with you. The dinner is great. You know, it's fun to be with you. But women often place more emphasis on anniversaries and think of it as a big deal. Why? Because when you remember, men, that it's an anniversary, you show that you cherish her. You show that she's dear to you. You show that you're thinking about her. That's the issue. It isn't about, you know, the box of chocolates or whatever it is. It's about something else, okay? So how do you communicate that you cherish your wife? Well, of course, already we know about tone and voice and all those things, and you tell her. But also, we demonstrate it every time we demonstrate that we cherish her, that we honor her, that we want to protect her, that we want to care for her, we want to express desire for her, all those ways, they show that we cherish our wife. And that's the reason small acts of kindness are so important. Why? Because it says, I care about you. You know, when your wife asks you to go out to the garage, man, and get something for her, go out and get it. Okay? Why? I love you. I cherish you. Of course, I'm reading the paper right now. No, go out and get it, okay? Let me tell you a time I kind of blew this recently. Naomi asked me, this is maybe a couple years ago. Naomi asked me to, we have a flat screen TV with a DVR and sound, and it's got three remotes, and it's complicated. And so she asked me, one time she wanted to watch something when I was away, and she said, because normally I have the controls. And I said, it's a man thing. Okay, she allows it, you know, she's good with it. But I was going to be away, and she said, Art, would you teach me how to do the TV, because I can't even turn it on. So I said, sure. So I said, you do this, and okay, fine, everything comes on. And she said, great. Now, a couple weeks later, she had I was going to be away again, so she asked me again, well, Art, could you show me how to do this? And I said, sure. And then a couple weeks after that, she asked me again, and here's where I did the wrong thing. And it wasn't that big, but it was not good. Here's what I did. Okay. Here it is in slow motion. Okay. Now, that was not good. But why wasn't it good? You know, I was kind of in a hurry, and I did the wrong thing. Why? Because it failed to demonstrate, oh, Naomi has a need right now, and when I say that I care about that need, it means that I cherish her. And when I don't, it says I don't cherish her. You're not my dear one. You're not the one I'm going to drop everything for. Husbands, I'm going to say this. Sometimes we say to our wives, I love you enough to die for you, but just don't make me give up my golf game. And when we say that, believe me, it does not come across as I cherish you. And by the way, this is one of the reasons why it is so important to listen carefully to your wife. Why? Because a woman will not feel cherished if she is not listened to. And this is one of the reasons that in every marriage retreat I've ever led, I always include a session on talking and listening. Because I know that if a woman feels listened to, she will often feel cherished. And when she's heard, she's saying, man, my husband cherishes me. He does what it takes to listen to me. So husbands, when your wives are telling you about their day or how they felt about this or how they felt about, your job is to start nodding and aha-ing and paraphrasing back what you're hearing and listening. You know, there's a guy named John Gray. He wrote the book Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. I can never remember which one those are, whether you women are from Mars or Venus. I can't remember. But he makes the point that men and women have a different psychological makeup. Of course, many authors have said that. And so when a wife starts talking, especially about a problem, the man's immediate deal is to want to solve the problem, you know? So you come in and you say, well, man, this is happening at work. This person here is being such a problem. And so the man wants to go, yeah, well, fine, great. Just do this, this, and this. And when a man does that, the wife instinctively says, you're not listening to me. She does not feel heard. Now, by the way, your wife is smart, and she can get, she already knows what to do. And if she wants your advice, she'll ask for it, okay? And she will ask for it many times. She'll ask your counsel, okay? But what she really wants to know is, are you listening to me? Man, love that cherishes and respect that affirms and appreciates goes such a long way in making a strong marriage. That's the reason it's conviction in my life. I know it will strengthen my marriage. Now, guys, either these things are convictions or they're preferences. And if they're preferences, believe me, your marriage will not be as strong as it could be. You know, if you're saying, no, this is something that changes regardless of the circumstances, it will not change. This is something that is not going to be open. It's going to happen, regardless of what the circumstances are. So my marriage is a permanent relationship. My couple friendship gets top priority. And I will learn to understand my spouse's needs and do my best to meet them. Man, what would Paul say? Get a grip on these truths. Get a grip on them. Let them be not preferences, but let them be convictions, things that you hold to. And when you do, man, you're going to see a stronger relationship in your life. There's always going to be, it's always going to take a lot of work, right? Is this going to take work? You bet. It's like owning a house. The moment you buy a new house, you have projects to do in it, correct? If you own a house like I do that's almost 40 years old, there's all kinds of projects going on. You cannot keep that house in good shape unless you maintain it. And you cannot, believe me, keep a marriage in good shape unless you maintain it, unless you do what's necessary. And that happens as you keep to these convictions.
We trust you are inspired and challenged by this message. For additional resources and information about Lighthouse Christian Center and its ministries, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org or contact us at 253-253-253. 848-2028.